You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to my couch, as you always are, here on Wednesdays, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, and wherever you are around the world watching this show. As always, I have a really great guest today. And if you would like to reach out and ask questions, you can sure go ahead and do that. The email address, we take emails, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I'm Dr. Michelle Cohen, and I'm trying to talk straight. I'm trying to lay it out for you and help you all out with certain things in your lives. Every week, I try to find wonderful authors and influencers, people who are, you know, amazing and changing thoughts and ideas and really helping out a lot of people. Today, we're talking about the concept of adoption, and my special guest, who I will bring on in just a bit, is amazing. You know, it's a trauma. A lot of people don't think about it who have not experienced it, but it's a lifelong journey, and it's often overlooked. You know, it really not honestly talked about probably as much as it should be. And I understand also from friends I've met growing up, you know, with other children who were adopted. And of course, reading my guest's book, adoption can lead to feelings of loss and grief, not just for the adoptee, but also for the biological and adoptive parents. There are 5 million adoptees in the U.S., many of whom are discovering their biological roots on DNA websites. And today on the couch, there she is, Janet Sherland. She's talking about this very subject. Her excellent book is entitled Abandoned at Birth, Searching for the Arms That Once Held Me. She's going to be talking about her own journey and explores the inherent need that adopted children have for a sense of belonging and the pain and the courage required to discover her true identity and their identity. It was a wonderful book. Thank you so much, Janet, for sharing this. I loved your memoir. Really touched me.
Thank you so much. That was my hope in writing this book, to really communicate the feelings, what it really feels like to be adopted. Because it's something you don't understand if you haven't been through it.
Right.
It's really a very socially unrecognized trauma.
Yes.
The narrative around adoption is that just a Hallmark story.
Yeah. You know,
a baby goes to loving family and everyone lives happily ever after.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is not the case.
Not the case, as we're going to be talking about today. And, you know, what was stunning for me to realize in your book, that in this day and age, there are only 10 states, really, Janet, that make birth records available to American-born adoptees and biological. Why is this, do you suppose?
Well, it doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. I was adopted in the state of New Jersey, and birth records are still sealed there.
Oh,
now, I was born in the 1950s. Ooh. So look at how old I am now. My birth parents and adoptive parents are all dead. Mm-hmm. And yet, because my mother felt shame in having premarital sex in the 1950s, records, that shame has dictated that my heritage, my history, and my authentic identity was taken from me, hidden from me, and continues to be hidden from me at this point in my life. I've discovered it. But the state, you know, the laws...
Right.
And so I think most of the people making the laws, and even maybe those of us in the public voting on the laws, don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Critical to an individual's healthy being, their heritage and authentic identity is.
Oh, I can only imagine. Bless your heart. And when did you find out that you were adopted?
My parents adopted 4 children, all from different families, through the same agency. And we were always told we were adopted. It was never a secret. Mm-hmm. I don't think I understood exactly what that meant. I just, you know, for me, it was just a fact, like you have blue eyes or whatever. We were all adopted. And so that's how we came to be. I guess it's as plausible as a stork dropped us off. But so we knew we were adopted, but we never talked about it further. You didn't talk about, and I don't think anyone did in the 1950s, you know, what that meant, what that implied, how we felt.
Right.
None of that was talked about, but it very much felt that we were all separate and individual. Wow.
Right. So did your siblings talk about being adopted, or did they share any feelings about feeling disconnected or searching?
Really just didn't talk about it, period. I think at certain points in life, I talked to my younger sister about it, and she and I shared similar experiences and views. Yeah. But for the most part, and I certainly, until we were grown adults, never talked about it with my brothers, or rarely. It just wasn't, you know, maybe a wondering about, gee, what are your origins? And gee, we heard a rumor that maybe your grandfather was a famous pianist, or, you know, there are little things like that. But we didn't talk about our feelings or what we were missing or the odd sense of disconnect and being untethered that we all experienced.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for that. In your book, you say that many adoptees feel like they have like a black hole in their center. Why didn't anyone want to keep us? And despite the fact you were raised by a wonderful, pretty loving family, you know, you had a good home and a pretty good life.
Yes.
So, but, you know, you talk about self. Yeah, go ahead.
Life isn't black and white. And so when anyone says, but you had a wonderful, I had a perfectly great adoption. And that's true. And it's also true at the same time that being adopted was a trauma. And I had a great sense of grief and loss from this being separated from my authentic identity. And I felt that separateness. I just felt it. It's like chemical. It's just in the air. You feel that you aren't of the same material that the people around you are.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, so you spent a lot of your life in and out of therapy, and good for you. You share that you had severe panic attacks that plagued you until your adult life. And do you suppose this was all happening to you because of the heartbreak of not really understanding what happened or why you were, you know, giving up, as we say? Or
I certainly think, I mean, I had terrible panic attacks, as you know from reading the book. But I think there are usually these seven core issues in adoption that adoptees struggle with. Separation and loss is certainly a big one. Trust, rejection, guilt and shame, identity, intimacy, loyalty, mastery. But I think I had I was very in tune with my feelings for this way I was born. And the chronic stress of feeling alone, untethered, rejected, so undefined. I wasn't seeing myself mirrored in my family. I couldn't learn about myself through absorbing that. And I just didn't know. I didn't make sense. Like, where did I come from? And why did someone give me up? And what's wrong with me? And I think that chronic level of stress and that just fear of abandonment and aloneness just set my adrenal system on such edge, and it just fired. And I had these massive panic attacks.
Aww.
And was very dependent on my adoptive parents.
Sure.
So afraid of being left and alone and rejected. And so it was this odd, I felt the disconnect.
Sure.
And yet I was just overly dependent on my adoptive parents.
Well, sure.
I was trying to feel safe.
Well, of course. And, you know, as a little one, when you sort of find out and or a little older about being adopted, there's always that fear of, oh, my gosh, are these people going to abandon me now? You know, I mean, that's really a thing, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And so that's sort of what you're talking about in your book. When you say that many adopted children don't feel like they have an identity, right? Mm-hmm. You can love your family that you've been adopted into and have good times with your siblings and be safe and comfortable and all that. But still, there's that missing identity. And you say it's more in your, you know, reality and a lot of people's reality about nature and not the nurture, right?
Yes, absolutely. It is so interesting to me. One of the things I've discovered through my journey is how biological, how chemical we are, and our sense of identity and belonging is. As a child, I felt this disconnect. It's just, you know, sitting around the dining room table, we were all just separate beings, just really separate beings. I didn't have words for it.
Yeah.
Felt it. And then when I met my first biological relative, when I met my birth father, with an instant, and I mean an instant, and I couldn't have answered two questions about the man, in an instant, I looked into his eyes and that big black hole filled up. And
wow.
I felt like I had come home. And so I thought, is this our cells recognizing each other through time? Is the blood, like, why is this happening? And, you know, we see it in the animal kingdom.
Yes.
We see penguin mothers looking out over 2,000 baby penguins and they all look alike to us. And that mother knows who are hers.
Yeah.
So there's something about belonging that we as humans don't talk about or understand or recognize. But I think there's a chemistry in a clan. There's a chemistry when you share blood, and you feel the absence of that even in a happy home when you're adopted. And that creates a sense of fear and uncertainty and sort of just trauma and loss in the individual.
Sure. Exactly. No, I really hear you. And I want to hear more about that meeting that you had with your biological dad. By the way, in case you guys just checked in with us, I'm with Janet Sherlin. She's talking about her amazing book. Even if you have friends and you have not been adopted who have suffered, you know, issues with understanding why their parents chose to have them adopted. The book Abandoned at Birth, Searching for the Arms That Once Held Me. I mean, when I got the cover of that book and I was holding it, and I went, oh, this is going to be a tough one, I know. So Janet's really writing from her heart with this particular book.
Yeah.
Just want to share, too, that Janet Sherlin raised her family. For many years, served on nonprofit boards in education, health, and the cultural arts. She's helped out so many people. Before writing her memoir, Abandoned at Birth, she's a graduate of Colgate University. And, you know, in reading your bio, and I was just feeling you, your single most significant life event was being given up for adoption at birth. Kind of undermined your sense of security and trust and personal value. And as you say in your book and describe, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, it kind of gave you an undermined sort of sense of trust for other people. I mean, how could you not?
Right.
You're like, you don't know these other people who gave you up. And of course, your family showed the, you know, adoptive family showed that they loved you and cared for you and all that. But still, there is this subliminal, you know, thing that goes on where we're feeling like, can I really trust people? Can, you know, that must be a heavy thing to carry with you through your life in relationships with people, you know, romantic relationships, friend relationships, right?
Yeah. And I think that it's not just on the side of the adoptee looking at their family, but I think the adoptive parents can feel that too. And again, not have words for it. I think it can be, there can be misunderstanding if an adoptive parent is feeling that,
right,
that disconnect, because sure, you aren't their children. They're raising someone else's child, right?
Sure.
And you are just, when they look at you, they don't see themselves. They don't get to see themselves mirrored. They're probably looking at their children going, I wonder who their real parents or their biological parents are.
Right.
And so whenever there's a misunderstanding or difficulty, as usually starts happening in the tween and teen years, it can be too easy to just step back from the situation. My older brother was a hellion, and there are four of us, and two of us were the classic, you know, wanted to be perfect so that we were loved and cared for. And two of them were pushing the boundaries and testing the waters to see if you're not. And when he really acted out, my mother once said to a friend, well, at least we could take comfort in the fact that he's not really ours.
Oh my gosh. Ouch. So
I think that sense of disconnect and sort of stepping back and you know, there, or adoptive parents could go, something's wrong. I feel something's wrong. Am I being a bad parent? The child can feel like something's wrong. Something's wrong. I don't feel it. Am I doing something wrong as a child? So there's this unspoken stuff that just gets perpetuated through life, and all sorts of then reactions feed off of that instead of starting out with that being clear and talked about and confronted and dealt with. But the way we've been doing it is not working. It's not serving adoptee.
Right.
There's too much emphasis on the needs and wants of birth parents and adoptive parents and their morality on both sides, and not enough to what does the individual that's being adopted, what will they need to grow into a healthy human being?
It's so true. I hear you. And talking about, you know, adoptive parents telling, you know, their children, I think you and I briefly chatted before we went live, and I was telling you the story. I think my sister was 5 or 6. We lived across the street from a family, and their daughter was my sister's age. I was 3 years younger. And my mom had told us, I guess I was listening, but I was just a little tyke, you know. But my sister found out that our neighbor was adopted. And she didn't really know what that meant, I don't think. Yeah. But we were playing with her every day after school. And my sister sort of said, wow, I guess you're adopted, huh? And the adoptive mother had not told her. We were not able to play with her anymore. We didn't understand why. Well, what we found out was her mother had not told her adoptive mother yet. My mom was so heartbroken, and my sister was hurt. I didn't understand why I couldn't play with her anymore, but that was just, my sister beats herself up for that. I mean, she's a middle-aged adult now, you know, and she still suffers.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot that when you're looking at a family, adoption, and I'm sure people looking at our family growing up, I mean, in every Christmas card or every Sunday in church, I mean, we looked like the perfect family, and there was nothing untoward going on in the family, but we were all traumatized by this displacement and this loss of self. A friend of mine recently read my book, and she said, you know, this really answers it. She said, I had a friend in high school, been adopted, but she was so cool, and her adoptive parents were so cool, and they had like the coolest house in town. We all liked to hang out there. We just thought that was like the perfect life.
Right.
And then at one point committed suicide.
Oh my God.
And none of us have ever been able to understand when she had what we saw as the perfect life, why she would do that.
Sure.
And so reading your book showed me that there's a whole nother level of trauma that adoptees are going through that I had no idea about. So it's, you know, looking at this, again, it's an unseen and socially unrecognized trauma.
Yes.
And we're trying to say to others, you know, we need the fact that adoption's not going away. There's this need in the world, but it has to be, these records have to be open and the trauma has to be spoken about so that you can meet it head on and avoid all this, you know, misinterpretation of what someone's feeling, what's going on. And adoptees have 4 times the suicide rate than the
normal
population. So there's a real... There's something we need to address in this population.
Absolutely, Jenna. And you talk about, you know, the depression and, of course, the anxiety disorders, as you experienced with your severe panic symptoms. And, you know, again, suicidal ideation and thoughts and people who've carried through with it because they don't feel connected to. So these are some of the important reasons why adoptive parents should tell their kids, perhaps, because don't they find out? I mean, here's the thing that would be interesting to me is how many kids who are adopted eventually can find out through just like my neighbor girlfriend did. And just, I mean, things happen. People talk. And
I think it usually comes to life. And first of all, most of those individuals who I've talked to had that story said, I felt it my whole life, But yeah. It didn't make sense because I wasn't told I was. So I didn't think I was, but I felt it. Mm. But to light in so many ways. I had one friend who found out after both her parents died by cleaning out the house, and it was papers from the family Bible.
Yeah.
And no one, other people in her family knew. She was the only one that
didn't. Oh, my goodness.
And nowadays, of course, with DNA testing and websites, someone that has that inkling or someone that just wants to learn more about their family and does that may be very surprised with the news they find. So it's, I don't know. I've heard more stories of people finding out and being, having their world turned upside down as an adult.
Oh, yes.
And going to the grave, you know, in that secret. So,
right.
Yeah.
When I recall when I was in middle school, I had a great awakening. One of the highlights of my, you know, earlier childhood, I was 12, I believe I was 12, and I was on the basketball team. And I'm tall. I'm not super tall, but I'm pretty tall. There was one other girl that was taller than me, and she was the bully. She was big. She was tall. She used to beat up the other girls. She had a mouth on her. She was nasty and mean, and everybody was afraid of her. And I used to get her, she used to get in trouble. She went to the principal's office a lot. She was just an angry young woman. And I remember talking to her after school. And I just, because I, it's just my personality, because I've always been a psychologist, I think. But I said, why are you so angry and mean? What's your problem? You know, I just let her have it. And I, again, I was tall, sort of, so I could kind of look her in the eye. And she started crying. I mean, I just said, you are the nastiest person I've ever met. Everybody's afraid of you. And she said, I'm adopted and you don't understand. And I went, oh. And so she sort of laid it out for me how she felt very different from all of us. Yeah. So she had to be really strong. I learned when I was 12 years old, this is a thing. This is a real thing. And I felt bad for her. And kind of just understood what was going on. But, you know, there is that, like you talked about your brother, you know, the child who was really unruly and really difficult. You know?
Yeah, one of the ways to express that fear and the trauma is just act out, push the boundaries and see who sticks with you and who doesn't.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And the story went on that, you know, I told her, you know, look, I, you know, I get it. I didn't really get it, but I just, you know, there's a lot of people. If you want to share that with the other girls on the team, why don't you do that? Because people don't like you. And so I don't know who she shared it with, but she seemed to sort of back down. It wasn't because of me, but it's just sort of releasing, I think, that information and making it okay to release that information and knowing that people weren't going to reject her or hurt her. We discovered earlier about, you know, the trust issue and fear of being abandoned again.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So let's talk about what you discovered about your birth parents. How did that come about?
Well, I had wanted to know, I mean, I can't remember a day in my life that I didn't wonder who my real, my birth family was.
Right.
I've been going back to really young childhood. But I had no information, again, coming from the era of sealed records. I didn't have a thread to go on.
Right.
Right after college, there was for a period of time, there was a registry you could sign up with and they would try and match. And
Alma,
it was called. And that didn't get anywhere. No one, you know, I was sure my birth mother would be looking for me and want to connect with me.
Sure.
Just like I was with her. I signed up for the registry. Nothing happened. And then I really just had nothing. I mean, all through my marriage, my husband would say, let's hire someone to search. But with what? There was absolutely nothing. And it wasn't until I was in my 50s. And meanwhile, I was, you know, reading about it, anything I could in adoption. I had done a special project and course at Colgate University, Identity and Adoption. I had written to my adoption agency for any information they would share with me. I mean, I kept pursuing anything I could. But in my 50s, I discovered my adoption agency was doing searches. And if the adoptee, and then they would get in touch with the biological parent. And if they agreed, they would connect you to me. And so I quickly applied to that and waited about 9 months for my name to come up on the list. And they reached out to my biological mother and she refused to meet me.
Oh my gosh. And how old were you at that time?
I was like 56.
Oh my God.
And she lived like two towns away from me.
I'm so sorry.
It really was. It was devastating. And I didn't understand. In fact, at the time I thought, what's wrong with me? I'm a grown woman. I have a lovely family. I've been in therapy. I've written about this. I have it together on this. Why am I so devastated? But it was like the wind was just knocked out from under me as I was being rejected again. The adoption agency said, we have your birth father's name, which was very unusual for the 1950s. The fathers weren't at all a part of it, legally didn't need to be. And I knew that they had told me that he didn't know I existed. He didn't know he had fathered a child at 18. Yeah. And they were now about 75. And I was sort of like, I don't know. He doesn't even know I exist. I don't know. But I wanted some medical information, and not only for me, but my sons. So I said, sure. And they reached out. He was very surprised to get that phone call. He was watching Jeopardy one night. But he said, if she has my blood, she's my daughter. Of course I want to meet her.
Aww.
Yeah. It was one of the most healing things that I'd ever experienced in life. It was immediate. Wow. And it, like I said, that big black hole just filled up, and it was absolutely a mysterious, wonderful, that was just the best.
That is a beautiful story. So did you go to see him or did you meet him in public?
My husband went with me. We were directed to meet at a public place halfway between our homes. So we did. And my husband drove with me. It was a cold January day. And my birth father came with two of his grown children and one of their spouses. And I was just so nervous. I almost couldn't see straight. It was a basket case. Yeah. And I was, when we got into this large restaurant area, I thought, oh no, there's so many people. I should have said we should wear red carnations or something. Like, how do we know each other? And I was standing there just in a daze. It was hot. I started sweating. I was so nervous. I pulled my winter coat off and I was just clutching it to me.
Sure.
And Rick, meanwhile, looked across the lobby and saw this, you know, older man sitting there. And he looked into his eyes and he looked at it and he said he knew that was my father.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't see that. So I'm standing there clutching my coat, looking like I'm going to melt. And in a moment later, there's this man standing in front of me and he reaches his hands up and puts them on my hands. And he looks at me right in the eyes and he says, you are Janet. And that's it. I mean, with those words and those blue eyes looking back at me, I just made sense for the first time in my life.
Wow.
And then I mean, that big black hole just filled up and I just couldn't believe it. And then I looked down at his high school yearbook that he brought with him to show me pictures of my birth mother.
Wow.
And his high school yearbook photo was on a name tag from a recent reunion.
Wow.
And it looked exactly like our older son.
Oh.
And I went, oh my God, that's Will. You know, I mean, it was just astonishing to me. And it was just, I mean, and there's something wonderful about meeting a parent in middle age. There's no baggage.
Right.
There's no baggage on either side. He couldn't wait to learn all about me and thought everything I did was, I just couldn't wait to hear every story of his and learn all about him. I reminded him so much of my birth mother. He felt 18 again. I mean, it was just pure joy and delight for the 2 years that we had together before.
Oh, bless your heart. I'm so happy you guys got to connect. And can you share with viewers and listeners what happened to your birth mother?
Yeah, that's the complete opposite story. So she refused to meet me and she kept refusing, even though I'd reached out every year for a while to say, you know, I know who you are now, Larry. You know, I met my birth father and he told me you know, she just kept ignoring everything and denying everything. And the adoption agency said, she has five children.
Yeah.
when she got married right after she had you, and just five times, and those are your biological siblings and you know, half siblings, and they have a right to know that you exist and to decide if they want a relationship with you or not.
Yeah.
And I put off contacting them for 5 years because, and this is again just testimony to how much we are damaged by the damage to that primal wound, because truly I can tell you everything else, all my excuses, but the real reason is I didn't want to reach out to them and make her mad at me.
Uh-huh. Oh, bless your heart.
I wanted her to love me and to love me.
Yeah.
I was in my 50s. I wanted this. And so finally I did. I actually was reading Joan Didion's Blue Nights.
Yes.
She had some things in there about when her daughter Quintana and her birth family, and I got mad. And so I wrote to all five siblings on that, my first mother's side. I sent the letter off overnight. And the next night I had a phone call from a woman saying, "Hello, Janet, this is your sister, Diane."
Oh.
And weeping. And we connected, and all of my siblings on my mother's side were so warm and so welcoming and so loving. And even though I never had that relationship with my birth mother, I did eventually meet her maybe three times. Yeah. She was very cold and very, just could not emotionally recognize me, and just was very always distancing from me.
Yeah.
So I never had that connection with her. I never had her, you know, hug or her even, yes. even sort of, yes. you know, I don't know, verbally admitting it in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had, you know, but my siblings on that side have given me the ties to that side of and a better understanding of myself through their my relationship with them.
Yes. So after you reached out to your siblings, so did most of them contact you, get in touch with you?
Yeah, they all did. They all did. Yeah. And people often say they're afraid to search because of what they might find. And my birth mother was not a nice person really. And it was very painful, but I am so grateful that I discovered that, because you have to know all the parts of you to accept yourself. And in your biological family, you don't get to choose whether people are good or bad and have problems or not. And you incorporate that into your sense of self. And I'm so glad I got to know her. And some of it was a cautionary tale. Some of it's like, oh, look at, I have that tendency too. And ooh, look how it turned out in her. Gosh, you know, note to self, you know, keep running back. And so, you know, without meeting her, I wouldn't know that was maybe in me. And so it answered so many questions and gave me more to work with in trying to really determine who am I really?
Yes.
What part of me is the adopted me, and what part of me is the biological me, and how do I bring this all together? And I am a big proponent of find it out, no matter what it is, good or bad. Find it out.
Yes. And be ready or prepare yourself through therapy or, you know, being mindful and doing research and just sort of getting ready for the what ifs, how you might react out there if you feel, you know, that you would like to reach out to your birth parents or parent or whoever you can find.
Yeah, don't do it alone. I think there is a lot of help around. If you're a therapist, perhaps there's a teacher or a parent or even a friend. And now there's so much online. My gosh, there's such a big community online that deals with this. And there are so many more books out there than there certainly were when I was growing up. But just know that it's a big emotional wallop.
Boy.
But it was a big emotional wallop to be adopted, and you've struggled with that all your life, and you're dealing with that. You know, get help to work through it all, and you will feel more peace and more confidence than you've ever had in your life before. You do the work.
It makes so much sense. You know, you understand at least where you came from. And like you said, they don't have to be the best parents in the world, or they have their own issues. But it's just nice to understand what it was. And back then, you know, there was shame involved, of course, you know, in the 50s and 60s, and there was still a lot of shame about, you know, having a child out of wedlock or accidentally getting pregnant or whatever. And that was the thing to do, because of course people do it today because they can't really caregive. They don't have the financial, you know, backing to raise a child. Excuse me, they're too young or whatever the situation is. But it's always nice to really understand. It gives you a sense of strength, knowing it's not about you. But they didn't love me. They gave me up. This is not about you, sweetheart. This is about their inability.
Yeah, and carrying that information forward. And as you say, nowadays, it's more the culture and socioeconomic reasons that someone can't keep a child. And I think we really need to focus on how to help there so that a child can stay with their biological family, even if it's not the birth mother, some member of that family, because it is so important to your sense of self and your identity to know your people, your clan, your heritage, your history, your authentic self. It is so much in the blood and in the biology. Yes. And being separated from that and raised by strangers and given a false identity. I mean, I understood as a child that I'm not really Janet Leaf.
Sure.
Now, I was really born to be someone else. I didn't know who that was.
Sure.
That, you know, understanding for those of us to understand what that separation from family is. And then people will say, well, what if the family's not good? Well, someone in the family, if they could economically or could raise that child and keep it within the clan. And so I think it's just really important to understand the damage this separation does and the being raised in a strange family, even if it's a lovely family and given a false identity, are robbing that individual of rights that they should be entitled to at birth, the right to their identity. Oh my gosh.
Sure. So
that's so I'm hoping true. This book can
questions there. Go ahead.
No, I said I just hope that
so the, you're blessed.
Yeah.
It's called Abandoned at Birth, Searching for the Arms That Once Held Me. Of course, my special guest, Janet Sherland. It's a memoir, but it's a wonderful, compelling story and book. Has a lot of lovely therapeutic lessons in it as well. So if you yourself have been adopted or you know someone or you want to give support to someone, I would give them this book. I was telling Deb, our lovely connection we both have, that I'm putting your book on my desk in my office so people can get it. And who would like to read it, I will tell them how to get it so they can read it, because it's certainly very moving and teaches people a lot about what to expect with their feelings and, you know, situations going on right now with, you know, people who've been adopted and adoptive parents. So it's a beautiful book because it's sort of helping out with your lifelong dream to understand and help others understand how to raise awareness about the loss and grief in adoption.
Donor-conceived individuals now have faced a lot of the same issues as they're looking for the other half of themselves.
You're so lucky because so you met your bio siblings. And so now I guess you have nieces and nephews and your children have cousins.
Yep.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Do you have larger gatherings with everyone or?
On each side. So we, on my birth father's side, my siblings and their families come up to visit. We're on Nantucket Island. And so it's a really fun place to be.
Oh, neat. Yeah.
They come every summer and we see each other there. And then usually when I'm, back in New Jersey, I see my birth mother's my siblings on that side. So it's been wonderful to continue a relationship with all my siblings. I treasure that.
And what did you learn about your DNA and your cultural background?
I'm Irish, very Irish English. And it was really interesting. The things that I love, you know, reading, writing, the arts, the things I collect, the taste in my colors, the taste in my collections, the way I wear my clothes, the style I use, these are all things that came through my blood, through my DNA. It was fascinating.
Yes.
And my oldest son, who always loved history and reading, and my birth father was so interested in history. There are so many interesting it's fascinating to me to see all the things that are in our DNA that I never would have guessed were in DNA. And again, just a better understanding of yourself and the world when you see where these things come from. And I didn't grow up seeing them patterned in a grandmother or an aunt or my parents or a sibling. Sure. I had no one reflected me growing up. And,
sure.
And this was like, oh my God, that's
right.
It's in my DNA. I share that with them. And even my birth mother, who we never had a relationship, we shared so much as far as our taste and our choices. And it was really interesting to see.
That is so interesting. It's funny how, you know, some people, you know, in my family and my sister and I will say, oh my gosh, you know, you sounded just like mom, and that wasn't good. You know, that whole thing. I mean, at least that was identifying exactly the tone of voice and the negativity or whatever that was, or how, wherever that was coming from, or, you know, our birth parents are like, the strength, like my dad was very strong and he was always outspoken and he was always sitting, and I went, oh my God, you sound just like dad. You say, almost repeat the words, but you know, again, even the negatives, it's nice to know that you are connected to some way and where you come from. You know?
Yeah, it is. It's helped so much. It's, you know, I understand that it's difficult to understand that if you have it, because friends always said growing up, oh, it's not important. I never think about that. Or I'm not like my parents, or I'm very different. I'm the only one that likes art in my family of scientists or whatever. But you know, someone in their family then also liked art, maybe a grandmother, an aunt or someone. And again, it's only not important if you have it, but it's the world if you don't have it, because you actually learn so much through that shared family history and hearing and all of that. So to have nothing, to not know who, where you came from, what you really are, why you're even up, it's not a healthy way to go through life, and it causes a lot of fraction.
You know, I agree, and a couple of my friends have not decided to settle with a partner per se, and they've had sperm donations, and you touch on this in your book, which is a fascinating side subject to me, is, can you talk about some of the issues with young adults who've been, you know, kind of conceived through sperm donation? They want to find out more about their.
Again, I totally understand that. I don't know anyone in personally, and I certainly didn't have that experience, but when I hear them talk, and he talked about, I totally get it. And even though maybe they know half of themselves through their mother, you know, just hearing that your father was specimen 1, 2, 3, or there's no cancer in the family, you know, isn't the truth and isn't the full picture. And they are feeling the same sense of loss and lack of definition and just untethered confusion and mystery that I was feeling as an adoptee. And their need to know that isn't insignificant. Yes. And I'll tell you, I got very upset a couple of years ago. I was walked into the TV and The View was on. And they were talking about these donor-conceived individuals who were gathering to try and press the fact that they want to know their father's families.
Right.
And Whoopi Goldberg said, oh, I think that's terrible. I know men that donated sperm in college, and they need to make money. They needed to make money doing that, but they don't want to be fathers. And they went down the panel, and everyone said the same thing. There was a young woman at the end who was a guest, and she said, I don't know. I just met my biological father 6 months ago, and it's a pretty big deal. And then they cut her out for the rest of the segment. And these women were all, no, this was the men's right. And I thought, excuse me, is a man's right to get paid for an ejaculation more important than an individual's right to their authentic identity?
Wow.
And so my point is, these men aren't, you know, these kids aren't asking these men to father them or parent them, but they're saying, I'm part of your family. You gave me, I'm part of your family, and I want to know more about that because I have to know more about myself.
Sure.
I was so upset with the lack of understanding that.
Why? That's good.
So I think I totally understand their need, and I think we need to respect it. And again, people talk about the needs or wants and the morality of both the birth parent and the adopted parent.
Right.
The birth parent needs to give up their child. An adoptive parent wants to have a child. the morality. A birth parent was irresponsible to get pregnant, yeah. And the adoptive parent's an angel to take these on. No one's talking about what does the child need? Should a child be born or adopted just because someone wants to be a parent? Does life promise anyone that you can be a parent just because you want to? Well, what about what that child needs?
Right.
If you're going to be a parent, think about what they really need. And do you have all of that information with which to help them grow into a healthy human being? Because they're really not your child. You're borrowing that child. And so it's just, it's a fascinating subject. And I hope that we learn more about it and open our hearts to a very real struggle that these individuals are suffering.
Oh, I do too. And I know your book will do that. So just what would you like readers to get out of your book? What are some of the most important points that you want to stress?
I think the fact of how important biology is to our authentic identity and to our sense of selves, and that love is not enough in an adoptive situation. It's great. Don't get me wrong. We're very fortunate. But if those of us who have even had a wonderful experience still struggle this much, think of all those who don't have a wonderful experience. End up in foster care or with abusive parents. I mean, there's just so many other much more challenging stories that are happening today. But to open your hearts and try and see this issue from the adoptee's point of view and not the birth parent, not the adoptive parent, and make your decisions as you go through life and at the voting booth, perhaps, with supporting the person whose rights were taken away from them when they were defenseless and they didn't have a choice about whether they wanted to leave that family or not, and help support them. And then just also look at your own life. If you weren't adopted and you have a biological family, no matter if don't have a relationship with them anymore, you're very close to them, understand and kind of appreciate what this means in your life. What does having this understanding do to my relationship with my family?
Right. And
how can I better get a better sense of what belonging means and what my authentic identity is?
That's beautiful. Wow. Lovely. And thank you so much for your book, Abandoned at Birth, Searching for the Arms That Once Held Me. Janet Sherlin, pick up the book at anywhere, Amazon, online, brick and mortar stores. And what is the best way that listeners and viewers can find out more about you, Janet?
My website is abandonedatbirthbook.com. And on social media, at Instagram, I'm Janet Sherlin Official.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing this. And I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy the way everything turned out for you in your life. And
thank you so much. I appreciate the conversation.
Oh, me too. All right, Janet, take good care. Have a beautiful week.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening and watching today. Really appreciate it. What a great subject. You can help out other people as well. Check out Janet Sherlin's book, Abandoned at Birth. All right, as I always say, take care of yourself first, then you'll be great for others, and that's the way it works. Dr. Michelle here. Talk to you next week. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.